Thank you for inviting me. And I am sick, I have to say. I almost considered not coming. But then I realized I already had bought my ticket. And so it wouldn't be reimbursed, you know. And so in the end, I do work for money too, you know. Anyway, so I have a perfect introduction. I had a perfect introduction by Brian and by Richard Seibert. And I would like to focus now more on issues around magnetosynthesis synthesis and potential connection to the dark matter. I can completely skip the first part now of the anomalies and the light element abundances. And as you have heard, there are anomalies, like in our understanding of lithium-7 and lithium-6. And I think the picture we have right now is very nicely put by the first two speakers, that there's a lot of uncertainties, and we don't know if those are actually pointed to something beyond a standard model, or if they are essentially like understood once like observations are done with higher scrutiny, or by other things, you know. What I will focus on my talk is, first of all, an obsession I have developed since 2004, which is that I realized in 2004 that both of those problems, the lithium-6 and the lithium-7 problem, you could essentially solve with one mechanism. So when I realized that by the decay of a particle, that you could actually produce the lithium-6 as observed, at that time it was only two stars or three stars, it wasn't the whole Aspen database. And at the same time, destroy lithium-7 by a large magnitude, of course, I got very excited. So this obsession has led me then to look at Big Bang lithosynthesis and all kinds of forms, usually with decaying or annihilating particles, to see if actually further solutions of this kind exist. And I'm talking about this, and then I will talk about something which I think only I have done, because there's things many of us could talk about here, you know, but I've looked in more detail at the light element nucleosynthesis when you have a charged particle, like a suggestion which was made by Maxime, which is a very, and others, of course, you know, like which is the Big Bang nucleosynthesis changes quite a bit if you have a charged weak scale mass particle. And indeed, there are some reactions which are very efficient producing lithium-6 and lithium-7. What I have worried about, and nobody else has done it, and that's why I talk about it, is like not only talk about the initial stages or the end stages of the initial, like the ordinary period of BBN, but the very late evolution when you have such charged particles around and the changes which come up. So I will talk quite a bit in detail about this, and I apologize about the technicality, but it is a workshop. Then finally, I will give some limits which you can derive on the existence of charged, uncharged particles from BBN, from observations. And then the last point, which has added to my excitement or my obsession, was like to essentially present some solutions of both the problems, lithium-6 and lithium-7, within supersymmetric, very simple supersymmetric models. So let me, oh, don't want to go there, so. Most of the stuff you have seen. Okay, so let me talk quickly about a relic particle of weak scale mass decaying, or decaying at around 1,000 seconds after the Big Bang. This is a very special period. What I, like I said, what I realized in 2004 and in 2002, the first thing is when you have a perturbation, the decay, like of a particle, you induce energetic particles, which are the cosmic rays of the early universe. The cosmic rays of the early universe, like energetic neutron, proton, gamma rays, are different than the cosmic rays at the present time. Those cosmic rays thermalize. And during the course of thermalization, they have, of course, interactions with the plasma, and they can do damage. The realization is, like, the first element which gets out of whack, like, which gets changed significantly, like, with respect to a standard BBN scenario, is lithium-6. And it is very easy to produce lithium-6 So following also the work of Dimorphalos in the late 80s, I noted that lithium 6 is actually an element which can is easily produced by either by the photodisintegration of helium 4, you produce energetic tritium or helium 3. This, since being energetic, can perform this reaction, this fusion reaction, which has a threshold in form lithium 6. This is possible by electromagnetic decay. The same is possible, of course, by hadronic decay, which I then dealt in 2004. The difference here is, so again, like, you know, you produce an energetic tritium, but this time you do it with a nucleon. Difference here is, like, this process can also, like, work at higher temperature, whereas the gammas have too many interactions in the CDR background. But the net effect is the same. You produce a lot of lithium 6. And so and then in 2004, like, at the same time, I realized that roughly around the same temperature, you can actually, by the injection of neutrons, either thermal, by a thermal source, or by a non-thermal source, you know, you can prematurely convert beryllium-7 into lithium-7. And when you do this too early, then the lithium-7 is actually burning very quickly and gets destroyed then. And as you know, currently, with the omega-B, as inferred from WMF, we believe that 90% of the lithium-7 is synthesized in the form of beryllium-7. So injecting neutrons can destroy it. So then, 2 years later, came those interesting suggestions that if this charged particle, which decays, actually this particle which decays at time frame around 1,000 seconds, is actually charged, then additional effects come into play. And this is actually will turn out to be the case in supersymmetric scenarios, the simplest at least. Those suggestions were made by a number of authors, and mostly I focus on one particular suggestion made by the group around Maxim Vapospolov here, which is like the realization that, well, first thing you think, like, a charged particle, weak scale charged particle, being around during nucleosynthesis, at some point it will recombine, like, will recombine and form a bound state with a nucleus. And this happens during and towards the end of Big Bang nucleosynthesis. The first idea you get, of course, is, oh, the Coulomb barrier is suppressed because, like, the effective charge seen is by one less. But that's not the dominant effect. The dominant effect is that certain reactions, like exactly the lithium-6 producing reaction here, which is a gamma reaction, a quadrupole reaction, because the mass to charge ratios of those two are the same, therefore it's quadrupole. This can be replaced by a reaction on a bound state where this charged particle is bound to helium-4, and now the X is expelled. And this realization came with, like, the realization that it is enhanced by a factor of 10 million. So very, very interesting.
Rather than X is
yes,
here.
You're totally right. Similarly, it is possible, as Bird suggested, that beryllium-7, being in a bound state, can actually undergo reaction towards boron-8 and may lead to some reduction of beryllium-7. So this boron-8 electron captured the beryllium-8, which then decays very quickly. And so it turns out that both of those effects are the most efficient in the same time frame, around 1,000 seconds. So it was very interesting to see that now, like, both, again, like the hadronic effect due to the decay would induce a lithium-7 depletion and a lithium-6 production, as well as those catalytic reactions, which go both at the same time in the same direction. So naturally, I was interested to see how this comes about. So I took the weight which was proposed in the papers, and I, you know, used also my numerical tool, which I had built over years. And the assumption here is now I have a particle of mass 1 TeV and have a hadronic potential ratio of 10 to the minus 4. What I show here is three times the same plot of the abundance of this particle relative to the baryonic abundances and its decay time. And so you see, like, here you're on 1,000 seconds. And what I had pointed out in 2004 was that, as I had said now several times, you know, that, like, for a hadronic branching ratio of, for example, 10 to the minus 4, you don't need a large abundance in order to either solve the lithium-7 problem, to have a significant reduction of the lithium-7 problem, this is the green area, or solve both, have a significant reduction of the lithium-7 problem and produce the lithium-6 as observed in low mid, or as claimed to be observed in low metallicity stars. So this would be the right area. Now, if you do not have any hadronic effects, because there's no hadronic injection, and you have only bound states, then the figure for the same, well, the same figure looks like this here. Essentially, you have also an area where both problems can be solved. It is a bit higher, so, but this is due to the choice of the hadronic branching ratio. If I would reduce this hadronic branching ratio by another order of magnitude, then both effects would be, this effect would be almost dominant at that point. But if you put both effects together, the combined thing, like for this particular parameter, the change is not too big. In other words, the conclusion is that the hadronic branching ratio of your particle decaying around 1,000 seconds after the Big Bang has to be very small in order for catalytic reactions to be the dominant effect in the lithium-6. Yes.
Very technical question, professional. How did you decide get the distribution of energy of helium-3 or tritium?
It's a very good question because I spend a lot of time on this. This is very important.
Yeah.
Because when you have the stellation of the helium-4, you get an energy of tritium and helium-3. And how much energy it has is very important, since the more energetic ones have a much larger probability to fuse from lithium-6. So this distribution function, like I was looking around a lot, and I have, as far as I believe, like dug up the best distribution functions, which were observed once by Tandler, 51, there's others. And essentially, I do theoretical sampling of the distribution functions. There's nothing theoretical in it. It's completely empirical.
Empirical means, is there any information about the experiments or something?
It's all based on experiments. As essentially, in the whole calculations I did, whenever possible, and I think it was almost always possible, I would have an empirical matching, not just the matching, but the empirical sampling of distribution functions and so on. Because I don't have, I wouldn't do sample the distribution function. I don't have function in the code.
Okay, but in my code, I have a very, there are a lot of trouble to decide the energy of the emitted tritium. So, your choice of energy would agree with the experiment.
It's experimentally determined. So let me now come to one subject, which is you have seen now before, like when I showed the plot, that for larger lifetimes, actually you were excluded. The white areas were actually areas like at that point which didn't work anymore, because why? Because you would produce too much lithium-6, and this would be due to catalytic reactions. We had the situation before already with hadronic decay, but if the hadronic branching ratios are small, then catalytic reactions would be very, very useful to exclude this regime of long lifetimes, above 2,000 seconds. Now, what I had worried about was that at some point, elements, well, protons and deuterium and tritium also go into bound states. So what you see here is the fraction of elements as a function of time, the fraction of elements which are in bound states. And the first one which goes into bound states is beryllium-7. Afterwards, elements like lithium-6 and lithium-7 go into bound states. Then helium-4, around this time, essentially, you can have a lot of catalytic lithium-6 production because you form the helium-4 bound states. But then, like when you go, keep on going at a temperature of 1 keV, so this is around 10 keV, at a temperature of 1 keV, protons go into bound states. And so my question was, like people at their point already like used the lithium-6 production at early times and say, like, this is 4 or 5 orders of magnitude over the observational limit, so this model is clearly ruled out. My question was, my question was that when protons are in bound states, those protons become like neutrons. There's no Coulomb barrier anymore. So nuclear synthesis could restart, completely restart again, and destroy all the lithium-6 or the lithium-7, which, or beryllium-7, which was partly produced. And indeed, it's better to understand first if this happens or not before flaming limits. And so I started an odyssey of trying to understand the later nuclear synthesis with CHAM. And before that, I want to give two comments, which are very technical. Apologize because you don't work on the subject. But the first one is that I found that recombination coefficients between a CHAM, the charged mass of particle, and a nuclei, they're actually lower than what most of you guys which do such calculations use, because like what you use is the low temperature approximation, which I can also reproduce, you know. But at the temperature we're working, like there's 50% reduction roughly of the recombination rate, so meaning 50% less chance.
With the energy injection, right?
No, just simply
the recombination.
Unit is for beryllium-7, it's two.
And so is for helium. I have full calculations. I don't think my rates are 350.
Okay, well, maybe I should.
We should compare the rates. I don't plug it into the hydrogen formula.
Plug it into the hydrogen formula is very dangerous, because this is a low temperature expression which doesn't hold here, and there's other no more to learn to
do. And I think one S or two S combination, and in some cases GP, but it's just small.
Okay, so there was a point we should talk about this, and the other point is that the photo disintegration of bound states, of course, we all treat, but by thermal photons, there's another effect that when the particle is decaying, or even before, because there's always some small fraction of particles decaying, there's production of energetic photons. And those photons can also photodisintegrate bound states. So this is an effect which can play some role. I did worry about it. In fact, in the end, it doesn't play such a big role as I thought. But for particular parameters here, you see, for example, the bound state fraction of helium, once when you don't take care of this effect, and the second time when you include this effect. So the particle is decaying roughly at 8 keV, and you see, due to the decay, the bound state fraction is much smaller. The same happens for photons. So those are two technical comments, but in the end, it's important. So here's now a list of reactions, here's the one which I had been talking about, initially, which is the initial proposed catalytic reaction. And here are others, which later on were studied, not studied in detail. None of them were studied in detail except for this one, for the group of Hamaguchi. Others, which are also important for the production of lithium-7 and beryllium-7. Then there's a whole list of reactions where the CHAMP is together with a proton, and which can destroy the lithium-6 and the lithium-7 or beryllium-7 afterwards. And there's also a reaction which can produce lithium-6. The key in those reactions is that there is really the absence of Coulomb barrier altogether. And so the nucleosynthesis is not clear, it comes out. There's other reactions. Yes?
This AXP bound state is very loose, right? And the P, yes. P distance to X is the distance of proton to X particle,
yes.
Is very firm. Yeah. So that. If you're really, really, really far at that zero energy, then yes, there will be no Coulomb barrier. But once you start resolving these distances, there is a Coulomb barrier.
Let's avoid about this as well. And that's why I try to do numerical estimation in the Born process. And it actually turns out very funny, because it actually enhances the weight. The Coulomb barrier is not even same as happening. Well, it's okay. The Coulomb barrier is not even only not present.
Right. It's
even worse.
We can save it for discussions, right?
Okay. I did calculate now all those reactions in the Born approximation, in a one-step approximation, because there were no there was no data, not definitely no data, but there's also no theoretical estimations of those processes. And so, like, I have to start somewhere and try to estimate those processes. And, like, my personal logistic was that as I would keep on growing with the paper, I would always find other processes again, or like, so shrink the whole thing about once.
Person, what's S gamma? Where are you going? S gamma, what is that?
Oh, because this is like the S factor for direction when this is only like proceeding over gamma, so it doesn't mean really like that close to like. So in other words, what I did, I like in my computation of those direction weights, I would first compute the standard process having some parametric wave function for the nuclear bound state, and then fit it to S gamma. Then afterwards took the same nuclear bound state to produce like the non-standard catalytic reaction. So as you see, there's a number of reactions. And I should probably hurry up a bit. So what happens here is now, this is the picture as it presented itself to me in the intermediate point. What you see here is the bound state fraction. And I only plot like tritium, deuterium, and protons. So tritium, deuterium, and protons. So all the guys which are important because there's no Coulomb barrier. And as temperature drops, you see that a lot of protons are going into bound state. Tritium and deuterium as well. But here, as soon as the tritium or deuterium goes into a bound state, the nuclear reactions are so fast that it gets eaten up. So in other words, like this by itself already shows you that nuclear synthesis restarts again. There's a third round of BDN. People have talked at some point about this would be here the first round of BBN, the standard BBN scenario, so to speak. And then the second round of BBN would start with catalytic reactions. So here is no, here are only the effects of charged particles. There's no energy injection into a hadronic or electromagnetic case. The second round would be here, for example, the production of lithium-6 from very low levels to very high levels by like the reaction where helium with a champ together fuse on a deuterium. And so this is, of course, observationally completely unacceptable level and was claimed to be ruled out. But then at a temperature of 1 keV, when protons go into bound states, I found that in the Born approximation, like the lithium-6 would be destroyed to a large degree again, along as with beryllium-7. And even some deuterium would be influenced because some of the deuterium, all the deuterium in the bound state would disappear. So, of course, there was extremely, bothersome first on the conclusions that those scenarios are ruled out. But it was also making me excited because, like, I realized that the beryllium-7 and the lithium-6 are very much influenced when you have protons and bound state. Because it is like you have all of a sudden, the time of 10 to the 6 seconds, you have a bunch of neutrons around again. And nuclear synthesis restarts.
I don't argue you, it's a point.
I'm sorry?
I don't argue you.
Yes.
Because you have all approximation.
Yes.
Like a big overestimation.
I also don't agree, but we'll
we'll have an option for
not
for us.
Really
from X minus.
Yeah.
Then lithium-6 interacts here.
Yeah.
In this point, here is a bare Coulomb barrier.
Yes.
This Coulomb interaction from here, X minus, doesn't affect.
But you mean the Coulomb barrier is not, Coulomb barrier suppression is not really good. Well, no, the Born approximation, I find, I was exactly thinking the same thing, but in Born approximation, that we're doing a completely numerical evaluation of the Matrix element, I find that it's not the case. So, like, if in case this is not the case, this can only be coming due to some beyond the Born approximation effects, you know. Or I would have done a mistake, but I don't, of course, naturally, I don't believe in this right now.
I shall show the result in my
I won't interject. I'd rather
wait. Well, because the fact which is even more important.
My point is that. Let's take, I don't believe that the nuclear rates are that much important, hence, but let's say, let me take them to the unitarity band.
And there would be still no significant effect on lithium-6.
You sure about that?
Absolutely. Because lithium-6 at speed collision, the charge exchange in this system occurs with a cross-section very close to the unitarity limit. And in every given collision, the lithium-6 attracts a charged particle and slows down to a halt. And then in the limit of the infinite mass of the particle, it's probably shielded forever. And the same thing.
Oh yeah,
well, sure. And what I'm trying to say that a lot of a significant part of lithium-6 will be in the bound state with axis.
Actually, like I remember, like you mentioned at some point, you know, like you have a sort of valid point there, you know, but in the parameter space which we want to limit, it is of the order of 10^-3, 10^-4. Mm-hmm. It's not very big,
no.
So one has to be careful, like. I agree with you. I did not treat one process. That's what Maxime refers to, I think. I did not treat the process that, like, you have a lithium-6 which is bound to a channel interacting with a proton which is bound to a channel.
But this is.
And that is the process where, like, I don't have any rates for. And those may be suppressed, this tool. I don't agree that they're suppressed, like, I mean, I don't know, I haven't started.
All right, okay.
But so like what I did is like I estimated the fraction of lithium-6 like which are inbound states, and I found it to be small in the part of parameter space which we want to exclude. And therefore I would go like this is, this could give you a partial resolution, but can't give you a complete resolution.
I shouldn't well, maybe we should turn it into a discussion session now.
No, well, it's a workshop.
Go on.
Okay, there's a but in any case, because there's other processes which initially I had estimated as being processes like including a photon, which would go as a much much smaller wave. But those processes are that, of course, you know, like champ being in a bound state, like can exchange, essentially the champ can actually exchange to an isotope of higher number or higher charge, where more better bound, so it's an exothermic reaction, and those processes can steal your champs away, for example this one, from the proton, put it on the helium-4, and this one is inert then at late times. Yeah? Yes?
Did you compare it with the cross-sections that you have of the muon scattering on the hydrogen and exchanging the electron?
I did compare it with some cross sections at some point, but I did not. Not this particular one. Not.
So how do you calculate? You include higher L's.
I include higher L's, but I can only work with the Born approximation. That's my big.
No, the higher L's of the residual sort of.
The Coulomb waves.
The helium-4 angstroms they will have for higher L excitations.
I did some studies on higher L's, like transferring to higher L states, but I convinced myself that those are not as important as the one.
That's certainly not correct, though, because everyone knows in the muon catalysis that the capture happens at the very high orbits.
So you're going muon.
The muon scattering on hydrogen gets captured by a hydrogen with a quantum number n equals 14, roughly, which is the square root of mu over ne, and with the maximal L's, or
yeah,
very large L's. So just to tell you that high L's are extremely important.
Well, this must be then an effect which is which is beyond the Born approximation, because in the Born approximation I did look at those things, you know. So, well, I mean, okay, listen, we're talking about 20 different processes.
Yes. This is an experimental fact. It's not the issue of approximation, right?
There's one detailed paper out on one particular process, which has shown that the rate you had initially proposed was a factor of 10 too high.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was proposed essentially, well, it wasn't.
No, not to point fingers to anyone. There is an experimental fact that the charge exchange reactions go to the large end and large.
Okay. But what I say right now is like, do we have a problem with the rates there?
Yes, by some order of magnitude.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you show me better though?
Yeah. Yeah. We're writing a paper on this, and I will show you how it is solved. Very good.
Yeah. Well, it's like this is the first step at a problem where nobody had looked at. And if you have 20 reactions staring at you, like to be done, and that is already like more than just like writing down a number to try to do like something in a certain approximation. Anybody, and that's like what I have been like saying like several times, you know, before, is like that now it would be very nice to find nuclear physicists trying to look in a bit more detail at those reactions to see how the picture is modified, because like I'm not okay. Well, let me continue to talk. How much do you have? 10 minutes? Or?
If you would have
the charge exchange reactions, then like the effect of destroying lithium 6 and beryllium 7 afterwards is not as big anymore. And you also see that deuterium actually starts being influenced, gets destroyed to some degree. So, but what I like, since we are like now here is Born approximation calculation, which I will certainly not tell you about now. Here you see now that, as I claim in the paper, there's considerable uncertainties in the predictions. That's like what I'm led to is like, you know, the calculation, initial calculation of the first catalytic reactions, like led to a factor 10 overestimate. I'm sure there will be a factor 30 at some reaction rates, you know, overestimate, or a factor 100 maybe in others. So, like, this figure points out like that here is the abundance ratio, it's a function of the CHAMP to baryon ratio. And you see like with the Born rates, for example, you know, I get like lithium 6 builds up, and at some point it gets destroyed with my determined Born rates. And the lithium 7, which is essentially beryllium 7, goes up, deuterium like this. But if I take three rates, you know, like for example, this rate here, I increase by a factor of 3, and I decrease two other rates, change it by a factor of 30, I will have a completely different result. So, meaning that I actually have zones which could work out with the observational determined lithium 7, lithium 6 abundances. So my conclusion of this can only be that currently things are fairly uncertain. And so, what I did then is like, what I had to do is I had to do some sort of Monte Carlo simulation, taking my Born estimates of those 20 reactions and varying around those 20 directions with some given like probability distribution to show how uncertain actually are constraints. And so that's what you see here. You see the limit on the CHAMP to baryon ratio is given here, and here is its lifetime. And the different colors here, focus on this plot now here, the different colors are giving you like essentially the percentage of models which pass. For each point I did 1,000 calculations with different models that seem to be enough. So the yellow shows that more than 99% of all models pass like the observational tests. And blue would mean less than 1% of all models pass the observational tests. And you see like going from more than 99% to less than 1% goes very quickly for short lifetimes. And that's not too surprising, because there, really, there's essentially only one rate which is important, that's the rate of lithium 6 formation. So again, there's no hadronic decay, no energy injection stuff like this. This is only effects of the charged particles. But the whole thing opens up to a very wide distribution once you go above 10 to the 6 seconds. Because like you always, for some particular parameter combination, find values where observational constraints are met. So you go from more than 99%, like so this area is 20 to 80%, essentially. See, like there's a large uncertainty. And then in the next stage, I included electromagnetic energy injection, which we know is like the most dominant constraint for large lifetimes. And this is shown on this plot, so it's exactly the same calculation, except that here now actually also takes into account of photon integration of light elements. And you see now the area which is excluded is the area here in blue, more than 99%, is almost identical with the area, which is shown by this line here, which is the area if you would get if the relic would not be neutral. So my claim, the relic would not be charged, the relic would be neutral. So my claim is that currently, like constraints are already very good, but currently with direction rate uncertainties, for long lifetimes, the constraints due to CHEMS are not necessarily better than those on neutral particles, except for one little island here, and this is this island here, around between 10 to 5 and 10 to 6 seconds, which is excluded and formerly was not. And that's exactly the island which is very important for supersymmetric stars, because supersymmetric stars like to live here too. They were before, they were not necessarily ruled out being here, but with the effect of CHEM, they are. And that's why it's very important. There's one other thing, and that is once we get those things better sorted out, and maybe it doesn't take like having to look at all 20 reactions, you know, but maybe it takes at some other arguments, I don't know, like then it could be that the constraints will tighten considerably for long lifetimes. Before, like, these are constraint lines now made when I take all the rates within the Born approximation. So I don't make any Monte Carlo anymore, just say those are the rates. And you see here the baryon to the CHEM to baryon ratio and here the lifetime. And what you see here is essentially like what is limited by this first burst of lithium 6 production due to like deuterium being reacting on a bound state of helium 4 with a CHEM. But then it turns out that due to charge exchange reactions, this process can be very important at later times. Like, so the second burst of going down of the constraint means that there's a burst of lithium 6 production because you have helium 4 now reacts on bound states, with deuterium, which can produce too much lithium 6. So there's some volume if for nuclear physicists or us to look in more detail at those things, because potentially you can increase the constraints by another 3 orders of magnitude, or even 4 orders of magnitude. Of course, things like there's no supersymmetry that's living down here anymore, unless you fine-tune it, because those are very small abundance already. It shows you how nice those constraints are. So finally, let me come to simultaneous solutions to lithium problems in the constrained minimal supersymmetric model. But the first part is my question: is there a possibility of finding more solutions to both of the lithium problems, like for long decay times, if the decaying particle is charged as CHEM? And what you see here is again the sort of Monte Carlo plot with the lifetime, and you see you find like the light blue here means like both blues mean like less than 5%. So here only solving the lithium 7 problem, and here solving both problems. And you see like the probability of finding those is there is a probability, but it doesn't seem very likely. There's even more scenarios at late times. That was one of my initial motivations to see like if you can resolve it with a late decaying particle, very late, more than 1,000 seconds. But now coming to the constrained minimal supersymmetric model, what you see here is on this side, you see here like the typical supersymmetric plot, which is often shown where you have the unifying scalar mass in GeV, and here the unifying Gugino mass, and like those are the bounds from LAP. And those areas are excluded by Big Bang synthesis. So the assumption, which I forgot to tell you, is that you have like essentially supersymmetry, but the gravitino is the lightest particle. So that means that you have a normal ordinary freeze out from equilibrium to give you some relic next to LSP abundance, which then later on decays into a gravitino. And again, like these areas here show colors which have interesting effects on the lithium abundance. The green here gives you like lithium 6 in a cord observation. Like the yellow here gives you, no, the yellow doesn't give you much. The yellow gives you lithium 7 in a cord observation. It's reduced. And the red and the blue, in different forms, I think it's mostly the red here, give you that both forms are solved. And so the other thing which kind of maybe probably like did bribe me into like following this more is like that by chance, this area which seems to be nicely doing with the lithium jobs like is by chance very close to the WMAP inferred region for the abundance. This is now like here, dark matter would be in the form of gravitinos. Of course, I was very interested in that, but there's a factor of two difference, you know. Yes?
Production
of
gravitinos
from Saudi case? Or yes. Yeah, only non-thermal production. It's not a problem, but it would have been nice if it just came right with the line. So, but in any case,
the molten temperature that is very high is nothing so unreasonable.
There's a really big
temperature of 10 to the 6, 10 to the 7 G.
That's exactly what
then you can easily feel this.
Yes.
One could argue about fine tuning than the reheating temperature.
In any case, yes, one could explain the remainder of dark matter in terms of the reheating production, which is only a factor of 2. Here's a similar plot when you do not have bound state included, because the interesting thing about this is all the tau is the NSP. The tau is the part of the tau lepton and is charged. And you see, like, there is not, for supersymmetry, there is not such a big modification, essentially, of the area like this. As I showed before, the hydraulic quenching ratio is typically too large in this particular scenario for bound state effects to dominate.
Excuse me. So at around region by WMAP CDM by omega CDM. So how large is the mass of tau?
How large is it? Yeah. Okay. The mass of the star. Okay. Yes. The mass of the star is here is very large. So on 1 TeV.
Yeah.
That is not very attractive for experimentators, probably theoreticians as well. And the reason is that. 1 TeV star you cannot see at the LHC. And that is because you mostly produce, you're colliding quarks, so you want to produce quarks. The star is 1 TeV, then the quarks are of the order of almost 10 TeV. And so you don't produce those. At least it's very, very unlikely to have an event where you produce two stars. That's unfortunate. Another thing which is unfortunate, another thing which is like the way it is like that. You will have to live with elevated deuterium. Elevated deuterium means of the order of 4 × 10⁻⁵ is something which is typically coming out of there. So like if you cannot, if you rule this out, then such a scenario would be perfect.
Excuse me?
Yes?
So you said that the hydronic large fraction fraction is very high, but it's never higher than 10⁻³ or so.
No, it's not very high. It's low.
It's low.
But
okay.
In order for catalytic processes to be more important,
yes,
in this particular question, it needs to be almost 10⁻⁵. So because hydraulic effects are very important, this is like for this particular question, lithium 7, lithium 6. So I show you like a comparison plot with bound states, no, without bound states, without the effects of bound states. The star, which is just made neutral, but has the same property, and here with. And also in the plot before, like for this particular question, like with the solution of like the lithium problems around 1,000 seconds in supersymmetry, like the hydraulic effects are more important. If you ask the question of limiting supersymmetry and scale, like there, the bound state effects are important because you can see this from here. Like here, like when you take into account bound state effects, you see that your gauge mass parameter is almost limited to more than 1 TeV or a bit more than 1 TeV. But if you do not take it into account, like you find the occasional model, which can actually decay the time of 26 seconds. And so you can live as a lower gauge mass parameter.
So
sorry, what is the Cappuccino mass in the above two figures?
The Cappuccino mass here is like it's varied between around 20 GeV and 100 GeV in that range.
Because the lifetime is proportional to the Cappuccino mass squared. Yes. That these two figures must be very, very dependent on the Cappuccino mass. Lifetime is just square of
the Cappuccino mass. Yeah, well, the limit here, for example, would be, or also here, would be attained for the lowest Cappuccino mass sample.
No, but if the gravitational mass is, say, 1 keV,
yeah,
there's no limit.
If you lower your centrifugal gravitational mass and you go further down here, then like you but that's known. It's known that if you go to GMSB, it's in
that's right.
Then you don't have any, at some point, you don't have any constraints on the end at all anymore. And also, like, if you lower this here, of course, then the mass is dark matter gets less and less, and those points move down. And if they move down, you don't have an impact on the lithium abundance anymore. So.
Yes.
Is
harmonic branching ratio, did you assume this plus to some value?
No, no, no. The harmonic branching ratios, they are calculated other Europe things too, but it's a student here that has worked a lot on this Sean Leiden. He has tried to reproduce a lot of things. So there's nothing assumed. And even this calculation is not quite proper yet. And I don't want to do it, you know, but because in this calculation, you do not take a realistic distribution of nucleons injected in your model. That is a problem. But doing the calculation, each of those models has an individual VBN calculation. But now also having a distribution of nucleons which are injected to the decay, you know, like which varies from model to model, like to do an individual VBN calculation for this is essentially impossible. So there's a factor of almost 2 uncertainty in those figures as well, because the distributions, functions are just assumed to be generic, like coming out of Twitter. You probably want me to stop. That's what it's all about. There's one that we have. Okay, what?
No.
So this data as well is more, that is interesting too. Finally, like here's the same plot as you have seen before. There's a photon beta of 60, so the ratio of the bats. And you see, like here, because you have a higher annihilation rate of stars into two Higgses, that you have actually less gravitational dark matter. You have smaller abundances of the stars, produce less from the gravitational. And what is left is you can influence the lithium 6 problem, but since your abundance are low, like you cannot influence the lithium 7 problem anymore much. And yeah. So let me. Okay, one more thing which I like showing because I think like it gets a bit forgot once in a while, or I don't know. It's like what intrigues me is that we talk a lot about neutralino dark matter. So the gravitino is now not the lightest. And we talk a lot about indirect detection of neutralino dark matter, meaning neutralinos annihilating present-day halos in the galactic center, dwarf galaxies giving us gamma rays, positrons, protons, antiprotons. And all those, like, you know, have been a lot of speculations about those processes. All those things have been well studied. There's another indirect signal of neutralino dark matter, which comes from the annihilation during Big Bang nucleosynthesis itself. And meaning that if you have like a hadronic branching ratio, which is not too small, and you have an annihilation cross section, which is of the order to be right for giving you the right abundances, you produce a lot of lithium 6. And what you see here is the annihilation rate in centimeter cubed per second. And you see here the mass of your neutralino. And the green lines, in between the green lines, you produce actually the lithium 6 as inferred in the star HD84937, the one which was observed quite well. And you see that this is the annihilation rate which is required in order for you to have a W map density. For the dark matter without any co-annihilation effects or nothing. And you see that you naturally fall close to like the values
of a neutralino, which are like of the values we imagine. In other words, every neutralino dark matter candidate like is associated with its lithium-6 abundance, its lithium-6 signature. This may be not very much if like the annihilation is not S-wave or the hadronic channel is like not so much, but it may be enough to even give you the lithium-6 which is observed like in low metallicity stars. So that would be independent of lithium-7. Lithium-7 would not be much influence there.
For larger cross sections for going into starlinium and the annihilation.
Yes, you're right, but the star cannot be the dark matter, the control. At least we think about it. So the conclusions are that the Big Bang represents is very useful, of course, in constraining the properties of dark matter. We have known about this for quite a while, but you know, we continue to harvest this thing. And that the lithium-6 and lithium-7 abundance are observed with anomalies, and that we don't know what's going on there. Is the physics behind there, or is there like many different things coming together? And one possible is dark matter can be a reason for that. Now there's a break here, and I think my personal view is that that there's much more work to have to go into lithium-6 and lithium-7 observational determination, of the sort of what Brian and Richard did mention, and that unfortunately BBN, Big Bang, will always remain too dirty to convince the community that something from BBN is connected to the dark matter. So all we can hope for, like aside the constraints which are very important, but all we can hope for is that we get some reason to look into preferred areas maybe. But we need independent confirmation of accelerators or other experiments. That's it.
Carson? So, what how do you think about recent, recent observation of warm dark matter? So, warm dark matter.
Yes.
Warm dark matter. So, Sira, do you believe that? That the warm dark matter is viable now, or
because
recently there is tension.
That's good.
Yeah, alpha, gamma alpha was is a main out observation and the X-ray observation. So currently, there may no parallel region with warm dark matter.
Okay, it is definitely not ruled out, mm-hmm. but it even has been claimed that the darkness to be warm has certain advantages. And this is in a similar state as the lithium-6 observations and the whole constellation is. There's problems which are lingering around now for years, and those problems are the absence of many sub-halos in the Milky Way, as well as the problem of the cores of galaxies, but people do not agree that those cores are actually described by MFW or like a finite radius. And those problems can be addressed as warm dark matter. Warm dark matter is certainly interesting in that respect.
Yeah, I like warm dark matter. Sometimes, if we mention the warm dark matter, someone who always complains that the whole warm dark matter has been rejected. But
I think warm dark matter will be studied more in the future.
Yeah,
I think people get more interested in studying warm dark matter more in detail before they had done hot dark matter. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Comment on this, I think there was a paper by Thorsten Brinkmann and Pierre Murillo who also looked at his warm dark matter from decay particles which became the gravitino, and they looked not only at their free swinging velocity, they also considered this phase space parameter, this large Q. And there you have criteria. If you fit that right, that looks promising that you can solve this missing satellite problems and so on. But apparently their conclusion is that with a charged particle it would not work because you're always beaten by the CMB constraints. So it would only work with like a neutrino NLSP, but then you don't have these bouncing.
Oh, gravitino.
No, no, gravitino is always LSP,
Star.
But Star NLSP doesn't work
if you want to get the right Q
parameter. Yeah, I think I know what you mean, because like
CFD constraints.
When the analyst key is charged, came to Gabbiano, then there is a modification of the power spectrum because it covers the CMPR, as been shown by Silverstein and Kandelkovsky.
Yeah.
But that would be absent here because you cannot live anyway with a particle which has of the order of 10 to 6, 10 to 7 seconds lifetime, that's what they need for this, which is charged because of catalytic reactions. So I think that's
something for much longer lifetimes.
But they didn't consider the formation of EPO. Yeah, the bound state is formed a bit earlier than their lifetime. In that case, such an effect is erased, smeared out.
They need a modification of the power spectrum, which you will have if the NSP is charged, but only if it lives longer.
And it's the Rickman and Uli related non technical.
No, that's the effect. That's why they say it doesn't work for a charge one. Do you think we need to get some lunch?
Very well. So we have about an hour and 15 minutes for lunch, and we will get dinner too.